Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writers on Chris Bell on LA Talk Radio.
Can we get any better than a minute minuet? I mean, really, absolutely charming. Welcome to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and you are listening to our 7th anniversary show coming out to you live worldwide on LA Talk Radio. I am here with my very first co-host, Bobby Jean, and Russ Avis.
Go ahead.
She always jumps in first. What happened?
Well, that's she's a girl.
Go ahead,
Russ. Are you going to say something besides complain? Oh, okay. And we have our guest here with us tonight too, Miss Judy Coder, and we'll be talking to her. Well, actually, she could jump in whenever she wants. 7 years ago, this show became live on LA Talk Radio, and it's been nothing but nonstop nonsense and controlled chaos ever since. Richard joined us about 6 years ago, Rich.
Yeah, about 6 years ago.
As a co-host, we also have Bob Brill, which I did not contact for tonight. And shame on me, I should have. He was in the studio with us for about a year. And, of course, Bobby Jean, Richard came in when Bobby Jean packed up and moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I think
he was, but he actually took over for you. In the studio. Yeah.
Well, no one can take over for me.
No, absolutely right. You're absolutely correct. Nobody can take over for you. No,
I started as a guest. I filled in one night here and there, and then Bobby fled California before we could, which is rude, I think. And then I kind of came in after that. But yeah, it's been about 6 years.
Right. And Russ came in as an ex-host of Atomic Dog Radio. They had canceled their show, and I asked him if he would like to come in and co-host. He said that would be fun. And so we have Mr. Stevenson. He's the one. Yeah. It goes without saying. You're a crappy dog trainer, seriously.
Thank you, sir.
You're the best. He actually trained my dog, Bella. Well, he actually trained Bella's owner. Trained the dog, trained me.
Yeah, and it's still a work in progress.
It's absolutely a work in progress. So, guys, 7 years, what do you think? We'll start with Richard.
Well, I mean, I've been around not quite all seven, but I remember the first night I walked into studio, and it was you and Russ, and I had no clue what I was walking into. I'd never done a live radio show before, and it was amazing how quick that hour went. And when you called and asked me if I wanted to come and be a co-host, it was an immediate yes, because this show is a lot of fun to be a part of, no matter what side of the microphone you're on. And if you're an author wanting to be on and you're timid about it, don't be, because it's a great experience. I wish everybody could do it at least once.
There you go. Bobby?
This has been absolutely a pleasure from the moment you, Jim, shared your vision with me and then invited me to come along for the ride. You have told us, you know, we will not interview off of a blurb or the back of a book or a synopsis. If you cannot commit to reading the book, we say, nice knowing you.
Yeah, pretty much.
And hasn't it made a difference to be, you know, when we speak with our guest, to have read the book, to be able to talk about things that don't show up in a synopsis, aren't in the blurb. Right. And right. How grateful, isn't it fun when our guests say, oh my gosh, you read my book.
I know. And a lot of them say that. It is amazing. But, you know,
it's because when you go on other shows, as I experienced, I had done the show with you guys. And then about 2 weeks later, I was doing another one. And it was clear as a bell. I don't even think they read the synopsis.
No.
So you can tell when the people who are into you have read the book.
Well, I mean, you're trying to get into the author's head about certain things in the book that you've read that don't, you're right, Richard, don't show up in synopsises.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And to bring Russ in, who is not a writer, but he's a great interviewer. He asks wonderful questions and always has.
And thank you for that. And the biggest struggle and obstacle for me was to learn how to read so I could read these books.
Well, yeah, but I wasn't going to say that. But now that you mention it,
I was so disappointed when I found out some of them are not on Audible.
Right. And they have already actual written words there. Chicken scratches on the page.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, you know, that the every show that I have been on and had the pleasure to be on, and I mean that honestly, I've picked up and read books that I know, with a few exceptions, I never would have picked up and read had I not been doing the show. And it's really opened my eyes to different types of writing, and some of the material has been amazing. And so it's been a widening of my reading adventure through life.
Well, Russ, one book that you and I read that we absolutely thought, both of us thought, was just an amazing piece of literature was the one from Peter James.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. What a great book that was.
And then the title eludes me. Get him on the show.
I'm sorry. Yes. But then we couldn't get him on the show. Yeah, we tried three times before we finally cornered him during his cocktail hour.
Yes.
And we disturbed his vodka martini, shaken, not stirred. He actually said that.
Yeah. Jim, as the host of the show, looking back over 7 years, has the show been what you envisioned? And what have been some of the things you didn't anticipate that have happened?
I didn't anticipate, you as the co-host getting involved in the show as you did. I didn't anticipate the writers coming in and being so appreciative of us reading their work. They open up to us a lot. I've listened to podcasts from other people, and Bobby, you know me, and Richard, you know, and Russ, you know, I'm very vocal about this. I think there's too many podcasts. But I've listened to others with the guests that are coming on, and you can tell, Richard, you're absolutely right. You can always tell when someone has not read the work. They just ask generic questions.
So do you guys have a favorite moment from the 7 years or a moment that stands out?
Oh, I was all a Twitter when John Sanford was on with us. when Craig Johnson's first visit in January of 2017. I believe it was 2017, January 7th. I didn't know how to act. I was like a little kid in a candy store. And Craig is such a nice guy, and he's been on the show so many times now that, you know, he likes the show for this reason. For the reasons that we outlined is that we do read his books, and we are able to talk to him on an intelligent level.
Yeah, I have a two-way tie, and I can't separate them as much as I've tried. As the night we had the author, and I can never pronounce his name, but he wrote Hook's Tale.
Oh, my God.
And John, he did a read.
Yes.
John something.
Yeah, right.
And he read a chapter of his book. And I think I was in Nirvana.
Oh, you were. Back. Well, yeah. I was watching you, and you were like, you were peeing your pants. I mean, listen.
That's what straight to it.
You were going
body
in the drawers.
Not only that interview, but that book is still one of my favorites that we've read.
Me too. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. He's a director. I can't read. And then his wife wrote the one about going down the river.
Right, with her family, right.
The memoir that was really good, too. Yeah, right. It's a good one. What about you, Russ? Do you have a favorite do you have a memory, specific memory?
No, I'm too old to have memories.
No.
I'll tell you, this is going to sound really lame, but right now, this is probably the most fun, only from the standpoint that we all got together and we have all these shared memories together. This is wonderful. Right. I can't believe it's been 7 years.
I can't either. It's just, it's flown by. I mean, with me being spending time in the hospital and you guys taking the helm for as long as you did, the show did not die. It continued to flourish.
Oh, we tried to kill it.
Well, he tried to kill it, I know, but it didn't work. So,
although Russ and I did such a good job, that one episode Russ and I did so good that Jim actually crawled out of his hospital bed because I think he was afraid we were going to take it and run with it.
Oh, that was with the guy who wrote the Wyatt Earp book.
Oh, yes. He has a lot.
Yeah.
See, we don't. Whatever. I needed to have that listed.
Tepper Tiller.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Was it Casey? Is his first name?
Casey Tepper Tiller.
Yeah. Well, I remember when we couldn't stay hardly in our seats. We were laughing so hard at that one time that Joe Harrington came in, and he was telling the stories about electricity.
Exactly.
We were just laughing, and he was so serious and telling so, you know, truthfully and authentically. And we were just couldn't stop laughing.
I know.
It was so funny. Yeah. That was kind of early on. I don't know. Joe was an early guest. His first appearance was in the early time.
Yeah, it was. But he was such a great guest. And
fabulous guest.
JR was a great guest. And and unfortunately, John Bergstrom was a wonderful guest. Yeah. And I made mention on your Facebook today about watching his wife with her bemused smile in the studio when John was sitting there telling us his lies.
Yes, Diane, they were always, you know, like my Jim and me, they were always together. She was always with him anytime if he was on the radio with me back in Santa Clarita before we did this show.
Right.
Diane was always there. You know, they were just, they're together. They're just always together. So
we had a guest on March of 2021 who had never had lambrethist. And she is with us again tonight. and Judy, you're welcome to jump in here whenever you want. We're going to go to you. I mean, we could talk about this all night, but we do have a guest sitting here in front of a piano. we're just going to go ahead and start. Bobby Jean, you can jump out whenever you want.
I will.
And we welcome back from March of 2021, lambrethist, writer, composer, singer-songwriter, just all-around Renaissance woman, Judy Coder. Hello, Judy. How are you?
Hello. I'm wonderful. So great to be here.
It's wonderful to see you. And you know, I asked you the other night, and you informed me that Mountain Charlie still is in the work with American Autumn to start with. You know what? Let's do this again because I don't know how many people went back and listened to your show. What is a librettist?
A librettist is to an opera what a playwright is to the play. I am the one that writes the story and the dialogue. Opera is all dialogue and somebody has to write it. And after spending about a year trying to find somebody who would get my vision of what I wanted to achieve, it just occurred to me that I could just, in the time it took to find somebody, I could just write it. And if it was lousy, somebody could fix it later, but at least I'd have it written down. And so I just did it myself.
Yeah, well, I mean, nobody's heard it yet, so.
No, well, it's still in pieces, but this current project has taken precedence because it requires.
I want to say that I went and I listened to some of your music, your contemporary and your country and your Western. Mm-hmm. And you got vocals for all three, which amazes me. You can change your vocal like I've never heard anybody do that before. But
I'm an imitator, I guess.
Apparently. And a damn good one. But for those who don't know, Judy is she's a Western artist. She tours with her companion, Jennifer. And you guys are going to be on a tour very soon, aren't you?
Yes, we have a couple of small tours, you know, gas prices being what they are. We just have to stay a little closer to home for a little while, but we have tour in Washington State, where we call home, and also a tour in Oregon, in the Portland area.
Yeah, I used to do those, and they're tough.
Mm-hmm.
They're a night to get up and smile on stage.
Yes,
you know, we love your fingers are sore, and
There's always somebody in the audience that's smiling back at you, and that's all.
Exactly. And that's all it takes.
Yep.
Richard, you look, for all the world, look like you want to say something.
Well, no, I mean, I'm kind of intrigued by the American opera aspect of it, because opera traditionally is written and sung in Italian. And I've always wondered why you never see some of the classic operas translated so that those of us who don't speak Italian can go and we can understand what's being said. So you never hear it in English. It's always in Italian. So I'm kind of glad to see American opera happening. I just don't know how much different is American opera from what we would consider the traditional opera.
Well, what you would consider traditional opera has been around for a long time. They insisted at the time, and you like mm-hmm. to honor the composer's wishes. But there is a lot of contemporary opera out there today that is being written in the United States and in Britain that is in English.
Okay.
And particularly in the case of mine, when it is based on folk tunes, then it only makes sense to deliver that in the correct language and in the correct dialect.
Right. Do you find it difficult to write that and have it be considered opera, or am I just overthinking it and thinking there's a big difference?
Mine is, I'm calling mine a folk opera.
Okay.
Kind of sets the expectation that there will be strings of folk tunes running through a lot of the opera.
Okay.
I question of an Italian opera because of the syllables in each word is different than English. So does
yes.
it change the whole feel of the opera because of that?
I think that's part of the reason they continue to perform in the language they was written in. And if you go to see a live opera at any opera house, anything bigger than a college campus, you will see the translation in front mm-hmm. of you. It'll either be on top of the screen or on the bottom of it.
Right.
Be able yeah. to see the translation.
Yeah, I went to right. see La Boheme in San Francisco, and they had, they had everything going on. Everybody was singing in Italian, and they had these two big screens on each side of the stage that was telling you what they were saying, because I'm sitting there going, no clue what's being
yeah.
said. So
yeah.
It would be nice to go see an opera and not have to get a translation or know the language.
They did translate Carmen English. And then they made a movie out of it, the movie was terrible, and I'm sure the opera was equally as bad. I don't know. My grandfather had it. What do I know? Anyway, we're going to take a real quick break here. You are listening to LA Talk Radio, and we will be right back with you right after these brief words from, of course, LA Talk Radio. So you want to be a radio talk show host, huh? Well, why don't you get off your butt and do just that? You see, at LA Talk Radio, we've got slots available all day long, Saturdays and Sundays included. They're 50-minute increments, so all you have to do is go to latalkradio.com, go to click on the link that says Become a Host, follow the easy-to-follow instructions, and Mr. Sam Hassan will be more than delighted to walk you through everything you need to do to get your own radio show started, up and running worldwide with a podcast to follow. That's very easy to do. LA Talk. LA Talk Radio, you've got something to say. Now let's hear it.
And we are back with our guest, Judy Coder. We are, it is now 18 minutes after the hour.
We are back with our guest, Judy Coder. And I actually turned off my microphone. I don't know why. I guess if you can't hear me, you can't see me. Back with our guest, Judy Coder. It is now, 6:19 in the evening on Pacific time. And we have been talking with writer and librettist. And I mean, she's a woman, does everything, and she does it all well. Judy Coder. And the last time you were on, Judy, we talked about the pentameter of operas versus doing them in English versus doing them in Italian. And I think the answer you gave us is exactly the answer you gave us before about that's why they keep it in Italian, because the pentameter and the rhythm is written in Italian. And the way the Italians speak, and you're right, especially dialect, because Italy has, 32 separate dialects? You know, if you're from Milan, you don't speak Italian like the Romans do. And if you're from Rome, you don't speak Sicilian. And, you know, and it's just all over the place. So it's kind of, Italian is the basic language of the country, but nobody speaks plain Italian other than the Romans, and they're lazy. What are you going to do? So, Russ, do you have anything for us before we jump into this? I want to get into this book that she is now writing about her father. Excuse me. She is, this is the first guest that we've had on. She is a working author, working on a work as we speak to her. This book happens to be about her dad. And I can see from reading what she sent us, the amount of love and respect she had for her father. And amazingly enough, he was into everything and he was good at everything he did. And it just used to amaze and piss us all off because, you know, you could never do it as well as dad could do it. But he never said that. You know, he always supported you.
Yes, although there were quirks. One thing that was very uncomfortable for him was to discover that he had actually been wrong about something. We caught him wrong twice that I recall, and both times someone in the family wrote down something for him to sign. I, Morris Harris, was wrong on this day, April 16th, and he had to sign it, and everybody in the family witnessed it.
Did you frame it?
Twice.
Did you frame it?
No, but we have it saved, and it's going in the book, trust me.
Okay, well, you should have framed it and given it to him for Christmas.
And when the will is read and they're all written out, now we'll know why.
Right. There you go. My dad, I think like a lot of fathers, we had this discussion a couple of weeks ago with a guest that was on. My dad, like a lot of fathers and a lot of parents in the 40s and 50s and early 60s, really didn't know how to deal with children. We were a World War II, I'm horny afterthought. And, you know, along we came and what do I do with this little thing now? I mean, now I'm responsible for it, but what do I do with it? You know, because their parents were different.
My parents are definitely different. My mother was a widow with two children when my parents met. And my parents got on the aisle with two little girls standing there. And so daddy, the 30-year-old bachelor, inherited two little girls.
Yeah, a ready family.
He was a father immediately, and they were not just a couple until I went off to college 20 years later, 18 yeah. years later.
Yeah. It's amazing because my mother was a singer, and her father owned two radio stations in LA and two or three in Detroit, plus he owned a studio. And she and her brothers used to be, and back in the 30s, there used to be commercials in between movies. And she and my uncles were in those commercials, like for Chevrolet and Ford. And, you know, they would be. And my mother had this shock of red hair that stood out like, oh, God, who's like, I don't know, Yosemite Sam. The best I can come.
It explains a lot about your looks, Jim.
It does. My mother always, and she was, I mean, she was up and coming. And then she used to complain, well, you know, you kept me from singing. Well, no. You stopped yourself from singing. I mean, you could have kept on singing. You know, you didn't have to have five kids. Of course, it's that Catholic thing and the Italian thing. And, you know, they don't know how to get out of bed. So, at any rate, I got that. But your research for your father is amazing.
Well, it occurred to me that really the point I'm trying to make with my book is that my dad was a very average man in some way and remarkable in other ways. Someone asked me very early on, so you're writing a book about your dad, was he somebody famous? And my answer was no, he wasn't anybody famous, but as a story, he had strong character traits, and he's the kind of person that you would want to have running your company, running your country. And if those are traits that we feel that our leaders need to have, then we should examine where they come from. And so the biggest part of Daddy's story is his backstory, his
right.
And he is not here for me to ask him. So I have to do a lot of digging to find out how those character traits were established and developed.
Were you surprised at a lot of the things you found out about your father?
I was not disappointed. I was surprised that there was so much there and that there continues to be things that I uncover, because I have collected research that I have only scanned so far. I haven't read it thoroughly. And so I continue to find little itty bitty bits that tie in together. And it's just fascinating. And I'm really loving it.
Okay, Rich.
Are you finding, as you're finding out these things that you hadn't known before, are you finding some of what you were like as you grew up in your dad and these little nuggets that you're digging up? Because I had a similar experience where I always wondered why my dad never got on to me about something I did until after he passed away. And I found out because about 30 years before, he did the same thing. So he really couldn't get on to me about it. So I'm wondering, are you finding some explanation of how you are in these things that you're discovering about your dad?
I think in some ways I am. Personality. Our personalities are very similar. Like him, I am very analytical. And while I can take a test, left brain, right brain, and I am right down the middle, 50-50, I'm not sure the same would be true for him. But I think that the way we interact with people often is the same. Both would be described as a little reserved. And sometimes that's misinterpreted as being aloof or even snotty. But in fact, as being analytical and taking a back seat in new situations, we're taking all that information in, and if anything, I'm a little bit shy.
Yeah. I see. My dad had not had secrets, but there was a lot of stuff I did not know about my father's early life, and I could never understand why he got so expected at flight school. Rotor wing. And he said, you know, he got just furious. In fact, he got so furious with me, he started a fight in the garage. And I never understood why until I got out of flight school. We went to a visit and my mom took me aside and she goes, you know, your dad. And she had a box of pictures and she goes, you know, your dad, you've never seen these. Your dad was an F-86 pilot in Korea and lost a lot of friends. And he didn't want to lose you as a son flying in combat. I said, well, I'm not flying in combat. The war's pretty much gone. But she showed me all these pictures. And I saw pictures of my dad in 1950 and 1951. And he had to have been 150 pounds if he was an ounce. And 6'1". And standing next to an F-86 with name on in front of their jets. That was my dad. And he also developed the sighting system for F-86s. I never knew any of this until I was in my mid-20s. And then I understood a lot about things that my dad had, you know. Excuse me just a moment.
Yeah, are you finding that you're understanding more about him the more you do this than you thought you would?
Yes, and one of the things that's been so exciting for me to discover is all of the contributions that he made in his field. He was an aeronautical engineer, and he worked with Bill Lear at Learjet just in the very early days. He had been there just a short time when the very first Learjet took its first flight.
Well, there's a job.
He did a tremendous amount of important just to extend that work to on a global scale to people that were working on the same things in different countries. And sometimes he was frustrated with either the corporate hesitation or such things as political blockades or language barriers. He talked a lot about being frustrated about wanting to work with Russian aeronautical engineers. And the language barrier was just one of the things that stood in their way. But what I have really had a lot of fun finding all of the things that he did to contribute. And I think sometimes he underestimated that it was hard for him to back away and step away and look at the big picture and take a moment to appreciate what he had accomplished in his life.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get that. Are you, how far into this book are you?
I'm not very far at all. I have done a tremendous amount of research and I have done interviews with people because particularly for the early parts of his life, I have very few people to talk to. Daddy's been gone for 19 years and his cousin that is the same age that he is 91 years old. And I have been doing telephone interviews just as fast as I can to get information from people, but I have had more luck talking to young cousins than I have having conversations with coworkers. His coworkers are gone.
Right.
And so that's been more difficult for me. And the reason that this project has taken a front seat for all the projects that talk to people while they're still around.
Sure.
I have no time.
Sure. Sure. We have nobody from my dad's era around anymore. Mm-hmm. If I ask my cousins, of course, every time you ask a cousin about your dad, you're going to get, oh, well, Uncle Wally was just the best guy. And, you know, we always just loved Uncle Wally. You know, but you didn't live with him.
Oh, but I got some great stories from the cousins.
Oh, did you?
It's just really fun. But they stop about the time he goes to high school or college.
Right. And
so that's fun. It sets the groundwork, but there are certain gaps that I don't have witnesses. And one of the things I wish that I could have asked him is that airplanes were important for him since he was a little boy, because mm-hmm. his dad, actually my dad's dad, was in the Army Air Corps in the same class as Charles Lindbergh's pilots, but they were in the same class in the same location. And so airplanes were part of my dad's life, his entire life. But for some reason, he tried a lot of other things before he gave himself permission to study aeronautics. He studied several things in college. He ended up with a degree in government and history that was kind of a pre-law track. And he went to the Army and did law enforcement. And only after he was done with all that and somebody let him know what was available to him with the GI Bill, only then did he give himself permission to go back to college and try something that he might enjoy doing. And that was either take classes in photography or in aeronautics. And he said to his mom, wouldn't it be fun if I could have a job doing the things I actually love doing? And I wish I could ask him, why did you hesitate to do that?
Yeah.
Why did you do that from the very beginning?
Yeah.
I don't know. I
don't think any of us think that way.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think a failure raises its ugly head. I think when we think those thoughts about, well, why don't I just do something I love? Because then it's not a job.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, am I going to fail at this? You know? Yeah. Probably. Yeah, and that's the answer I give myself. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. We got to take another quick break and we'll be back with you in just a moment. Right now, we're going to take a break. And if you're listening to LA Talk Radio, and we'll be right back after this brief word from Tuscany Bay Books.
Hey, everybody. Richard Polinelli from Tuscany Bay Books here. And if you're an author and you've just finished your manuscript, you just got the easy part done. There is editing, formatting, cover creation, marketing. The list goes on and on. But don't panic, because we're here and we can do all of that for you so that you can focus on the most important thing, writing your next book. And if you're a reader looking for your next great read, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com. We have books for the kids. We have mysteries. We have thrillers. We have westerns. And we have some of the best science fiction being written by award-winning science fiction authors who will tell you an entertaining story, not send you to your therapist with message fiction. So again, readers and writers, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com and get ready to set sail on your next great adventure.
And we are back with our guest, Judy Coder. It is now 6:35. And anyone else have any questions before we ask the question?
I'm just curious about time and difficulty in tracking down the people that were involved in your dad's life. And is it difficult to get people to talk?
Good question, Russ.
And how tough is it to find the information?
It varies. There are some people that are really anxious to contribute, and there are other people that just stop at the, your dad was just such a great guy. And that's about all I get out of them. It's very interesting. I am learning how to do so many things. I'm learning how to do a better job of interviewing, about asking a question, and then sitting back and letting them think through their answer without me stepping on their thought process. It's so difficult, and I'm getting better at it. So my later interviews are more successful. And I am also learning how to write. And so while I'm getting the research and getting it into an outline and a timeline, I'm learning how to write a book because I've never done that before. And I started by doing what people suggested. If you want to write a biography, read some really well-written biographies. And I got a lot of people's recommendations, and one after another just bored me to tears because they start with the backstory and they start talking about the main subject's parents or even grandparents. And they spend chapter after chapter talking about somebody that I didn't sign up for. And right. So I'm wanting to learn about structure so that I can deliver that backstory without boring my reader, because the backstory is huge. I would start with his parents. I think I have to put that in some other way. And so there's just such a big process involved. And the military records are hard to find because if you consult the military for someone's military records, all the details, you're waiting in line behind veterans who are alive now, who are waiting for their records, their benefits. And so understandably, getting military records is going to be a long process. I may end up skipping over it.
Do you think maybe finding a key moment in his life and starting there, and then as you progress, kind of weave in the backstory as you go? Do you think that's a way to go?
I don't know if I have chosen the right one, because he's 13, and that's quite a bit of time. There might be something earlier that could still have an impactful beginning for the book. But at the moment, that's the way I have started it. Just to start writing. And I can always make adjustments. All these stories have to be written down. But until I know the complete big picture, the overall story, I can't really write the plot when I don't know the story. And the first 30 years, I don't know the story. Sure. And so I have so much research to do.
You know, it sounds really interesting from the standpoint that, like, when somebody's writing a novel, and we've talked to a lot of novelists, that a lot of them will storyboard it out. They're going to go this direction, then I have this hook in here, and then we'll reverse and go this way. So they kind of have it planned out, and then they write it to fill in. But with you, you have no idea where it's going to go. You're more like a detective to figure out. But also, the other question I had is, as you go through this, you said you were learning how to write. How are you learning that? This is the part that's really curious to me, because I'm not a writer, but I've kind of always wanted to be. So how are you learning this?
Well, you played one on TV.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. I have done a lot of research online through libraries, and I have taken some very good information, really. I took a workshop called The Right Structure by Joe Bunting. He has a book by the same name. He is also a part of the Right Practice, lots of useful blogs, studying in detail. I'm in the middle right now of a book by John Warner called The Secrets to Creating Character Arcs, because my story basically is a character story. I'm talking about the development of my dad's character and how that influences the way he interacts with the things that come his way. So The Secrets to Creating Character Arcs by John Warner is a huge book for me. Also, Writing Life Stories by Bill Rohrbach. And finally, I am currently a beta reader for book 7 of the Father Hardy Mystery Series by Jonathan Thomas Stratman. I'm a huge fan, and I'm taking note of his use of character development because this is book 7. And so he has this unique task in him to continue to go on in and out over 7 books. And the same thing will be true for me. When I get to chapter 20 and his dad is still around, we need to be able to remember enough about his dad that when his character takes a new turn, we're not surprised and confused and feeling like we need to go back and review who the heck that person was. And so I have so much to learn, but everything that I'm reading is making a whole lot of sense. And I'm excited about the project.
Now, we have found, and Richard, back me up if you can, and maybe even Russ, we have found that the most enjoyable biographies we have read, and you know, in 7 years we've read a few, have been written more as a novel than as those would be the ones that grab us and that hold our attention. And I think the medicinal, I say medicinal because I don't have a better word for it, but I think that probably, you know, ices the cake. The ones that are written point blank, medicinally, boom, 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 this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, I think put too much stock in making sure facts are correct and not getting into the person they're actually writing about.
So and I think you're thinking it's more of a Joe Freddy police report than it is a book you want to read.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the facts, man. Just the facts. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that has a lot to do with when you're writing a biography. I'm not trying to tell you how to write your book, Judy, but
yes, you are.
People don't.
Oh, of course I am. But often. But never having written a biography, I couldn't tell you. But like Rich and I make, you know, the most fairly certain that if we had to do a biography, we could do it.
Yeah.
Okay, you've done one. There you go.
I've done one. Yeah, I have done one.
My friend Junie Fisher says that I'm taking on a very big project.
Because, you are.
Biography is not what she would start with. It's so.
No, I wouldn't either.
Yeah. Well, you know, here I am. I'm here now. And yeah. I do believe that I will probably produce something that is a bit like a novel, that reads a bit like a novel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're probably going to get a hit with that. Mm-hmm. And Junie is a friend of the show. She's. We love Junie Fisher. I mean, she's been on here a couple of times, and she's a neatest lady. We do have to take another real quick break, and then we'll be back with you because I have a question I need to ask. And that break is for you're listening to LA Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this brief word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Okay. The folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up, so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcasts, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge. It's your work, and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity.
And we are back. It is now 6:45. We are with our guest, Judy Coder. And the question I have to ask you, Judy, and I believe I asked you this before, have you got a rock? And if you did, how did you get out of it? And if you haven't, how many times have you gotten on your knees and praised God?
I haven't gotten writer's block per se, but I have some stories that I am avoiding. There are some stories that are big, and so many of them are incomplete until I do more research. It gives me permission to push it to the side.
Gotcha.
The biggest part really is the ending. I don't know how to end it, and I was there for it. And my dad's battle with cancer is the biggest part of the book. I didn't want to start with it because I didn't want him to be defined by his big battle. That didn't seem right to me. But the book has nothing about it. I have a huge collection of information, and I have interviewed my mom and my sisters some, probably will some more, to get their perspective on it. But I was there, and I just don't know how to end the book because I'm a musician, and I like a big ending. And
a big finish, yeah.
I am blank on how to end that story.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I go to the same thing when I'm finishing up a book too, and I'll get to the end of the book and I go, well, that's not really the end. So what is the end? So get in the habit of putting not a prologue but an epilogue in there.
Yes, that's possible. That would
and the epilogue usually it could be 50 pages. But it kind of ties up everything and, you know, leaves the reader not wanting more information, but feeling that they've completed the book.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and maybe, I mean, I'm not saying that's what you should do, but that's an idea.
It is.
And Richard, I know you put epilogues in your books.
I do prologues and epilogues when each book demands one, when they
demand it. And a lot of times when you start a book and your chapter, chapter one, you're writing chapter one, you go, wait a minute, I got to put a preface in. I got to put an epilogue in here or a prologue because nobody knows who this person is. Let's try to give them a little bit of a backstory, which I did with Jefferson's Chance and how he lost his leg. And so you're not lost in the story. Oh, wait a minute, this guy doesn't have a leg. How come? You know, so anyway, you know, we're out of time. Our next show, we hang out and we kind of BS and drink our way to Friday. well, we don't really, but well, some of us do.
Actually, I started that an hour ago.
Good for you. we still can't see you, which is probably a good thing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably sitting there naked and nobody knows it. Next week, we have Aunt Charles with us. She's a return guest. And I've got her new book. I don't recall the title, but Rich, do you have it up on your?
No, I do not, unfortunately.
Okay, well, I've started reading it. It's actually kind of cool. It's a spooky book, so it ought to be pretty good. And Judy Coder, we thank you for giving of your evening. And well, I know it's still early there. Here it's 8 o'clock, or almost 8 o'clock. And when you finish the book, what is the title of this book? You never told us.
I don't know yet. How many times have you gone to the movies and watched those trivia things where they say the working title for this movie was, and it's nothing like the ending?
Oh, I know, huh? And you go, I have no clue.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where I am.
You know, okay, well, good on you. I like I said, I couldn't do a biography, so I wouldn't know what the title if I had to. Okay, well, we are out of time. Don't go away. It's, of course, with Sam Hassan, and we want to thank everybody. Everybody connected with this show. There's 7 years gone down. It's been a great seven. We're going to shoot for another. Thank you, Bobby Jean. I know you had to get out. Russ, you're always welcome, my brother. Just, you know, make sure your Skype works.
Yes, indeed.
Richard, of course, Richard, you're always – Richard is the other half of Tuscany Bay Books. So Richard and I are actually working with new author right now. Without him, the show would not be possible. And our engineer and wonderful owner of LA Talk Radio, Mr. Sam Hassan. And we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.